Hello, and welcome to episode 133 of the Sea Control Podcast, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security. My name is Matthew Marighi, your senior producer for Sea Control, and on this episode, I interview Professor Chris Taylor of Georgetown University about his innovative course called Hacking for Defense, Solving National Security Challenges with the Lean Launchpad. We talk about the purpose of the course, how well Silicon Valley's culture can work in the national security sector, and how Chris went from being in the Marine Corps over to the business world. We'll start with this eye-opening interview after a brief word about our organization.
SIMSEC brings you the best content on maritime security, technology, history, and international affairs. Sign up to become a member today by visiting www.cimsec.org/about/membership. Join us today.
And we're back. As I mentioned at the top, I'm here with Professor Chris Taylor of Georgetown University and a member of Hacking for Defense. Professor Taylor, thank you very much for being with us on Sea Control today.
It's my pleasure.
Now, as is Sea Control tradition, please, Professor Taylor, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to be where you are right now.
Sure. So I spent 14 years in the Marine Corps as an enlisted infantryman and Force Recon Marine. I finished undergrad at night. I went to night school my last 3 years. I left the Marine Corps and went to business school at the College of William & Mary, where I earned an MBA, and worked for 5 years after that. I went back to school, to grad school, to the Harvard Kennedy School, where I earned an MPA in political economy and international security. And I've been working ever since. I'm a two-time defense industry CEO, and as you mentioned, I'm also an adjunct professor of national security studies at Georgetown University.
So let's talk a little bit then about your background. You obviously have a very broad array of different experiences, both within the military, outside of it, leading businesses, but also a very diverse educational background. What were sort of the key decision points in your life as you were building your career and your educational background that sort of guided you on the path that you eventually went down?
So I had spent 14 years in the Marine Corps. I wanted my boss's job. At the time, I was a staff sergeant. My boss was a major. When I did the math, or the reverse math, I would have had to have spent 10 more years to get promoted to major just to have that job. And as I evaluated all the fantastic experiences I had in the Marine Corps and what it had done, those experiences had done to develop me as a leader, I thought, well, maybe there's a different way. And I wanted a way to push through my Marine Corps experience through some sort of framework, and I chose business school. And I don't regret that at all. It was fantastic. I loved every minute of my 14 years in the Marine Corps, but I loved business school. I had a fairly easy transition to school and got out, and I worked for 5 years, obviously, in the private sector, and then decided, look, during this same formula, now I've got 5 more years of experience, and I don't know what framework to push through all of this experience to get the most out of it or to contribute the most with it. So I went back to grad school, up to the Kennedy School, and was very fortunate. Look, I had fantastic classmates. I had fantastic professors. Secretary Ash Carter was actually my advisor at the Kennedy School. So I had access to brilliant national security minds helping me think through how my experience would allow me to contribute further along the whole way. And that led me to leading some businesses that were successful. And now I suppose I've dipped my toe into the teaching part of life to see how my experiences can help push forward the next few generations of national security leaders. And that's how we got to be on the phone today.
Well, let's talk then about that educational piece. I have here, as a graduate of Georgetown University, I've been able to navigate the website relatively well. And I have here on the Hacking for Defense, the GU.com's general info page,
A class basic title, SEST-701, Hacking for Defense, Solving National Security Issues with the Lean Launchpad, which is obviously a lot of words, which I kind of understand as a man now that with a security background and with a little bit of a startup background, but you're listed as one of the instructors for this course. So I was wondering, at the very least, walk us through the title. What exactly is Hacking for Defense, and why is the Lean Launchpad a part of solving national security issues?
So Hacking for Defense was a name that was that came along with the package when I first was asked to participate. Most people, when they hear it, think it's only about cyber. That's not true. Think about it in the way that we might consider life hacks, easy ways, quick ways to get good things done that result in great benefit. And then the Lean Launchpad is a class that world-renowned and legendary Silicon Valley entrepreneur Steve Blank has been teaching this class, the Lean Launchpad, which is basically a business about how to create and run a startup. Through a series of conversations that happened out at Stanford, where Steve was teaching this, with Pete Newell, who's a retired Army colonel, and Joe Felter, also a retired Army colonel, the thought was, how do we apply this lean startup methodology to national security challenges? And MD5, which is the National Security Technology Accelerator at National Defense University, run by Jay Harrison, is the U.S. government proponent for the entire education program. And I've known Pete and Joe for a number of years. When they decided that they were going to syndicate the class to universities across the country, I raised my hand and said, I'd love to bring it to Georgetown. What do you think? They said, sure. And we're about to close out our first Hacking for Defense class May 1st.
Oh, so this is just the first iteration of it?
It's the first iteration at Georgetown. Stanford is currently teaching their second, or they're about to begin their second iteration. Oh, no, they've begun their second iteration. There have been other classes at the University of California, San Diego, at Boise State, at University of Pittsburgh, James Madison University, and us. And I don't think I'm leaving anybody out. I think those are the universities that have taught it thus far.
So the model has kind of proliferated and been, you know, licensed, as you mentioned, you know, across a number of different universities, but still it is very new. So I'm curious, now that you're finishing your first session and from the feedback that you've gotten from Professor Blank and from the other institutions that you've talked to, how's the course been going so far? What have been the things that you sort of expected as a result of teaching this, and what has surprised you about what you've offered?
Well, I will tell you, the first and foremost, the most exciting thing that's happened is that I have nothing but complete confidence in our graduate students across the country to help us solve national security problems going forward. Our class has been nothing less than stellar. They are smart. They're committed. They work well in teams. They've been doing lots of discovery, and they're helping to solve problems. So first and foremost, that's fantastic. The second thing is that what we've learned is that when you allow students to self-organize their teams, diverse teams, around a problem, you get exponentially better results from that experience than if they were, for instance, assigned to a team and then assigned to a problem. So we're very clear that self-organization leads to the best outcomes thus far. One of the things that's amazing about the Hacking for Defense class is that it's actually a team of teams. So at the center is the student team, but surrounding them are the teaching team, myself, and Army Lieutenant Colonel Matt Zace, who is the Deputy Director of the Strategic Initiatives Group at U.S. Army Cyber Command, is my teaching partner. So we have the teaching team. Then we have a series of corporate partners. So we use companies like SAIC, Amazon Web Services, SAP, National Security Solutions, and many, many others come to the classroom every class, and they're there to support the student team. So if they get to a point in their problem solving that they require a specific resource, an engineering resource, for instance, or an instance in a cloud environment, or just mentoring about how to think through a problem, we have all those people in the classroom. We also have mentors who are folks of great experience in both the national security ecosystem and business that they can reach out to discuss their problems and sort of think differently about these hard problems. And then we have military and intelligence community liaisons. So these are active duty folks, active duty in the military and currently serving in the intelligence community, who are able to ensure that these teams can reach out to people within the organizations that they're working with, what we call their problem sponsors, and are able to connect with those people to ask and elicit as much information as they can to help solve this problem or the problem that they have. We have four problems we're working on this semester. One is from the U.S. Special Operations Command. It's a cross-domain solution challenge. The next is how to use augmented reality to help military and intelligence personnel see in unstructured crowds bad guys. The next one is a social media problem, and that is how do we use social media from an information warfare perspective to better understand what our adversaries might be doing with social media against us, and equally challenging problem. So we've got a series of great challenge. Oh, I'm sorry. We also have a counter drone problem, all the rage, right? Everybody's writing about counter drone. So we have a team that's working on how to use low cost solutions to counter drones, particularly drones that you might see ISIS flying today. And so we've got a team working on that as well.
That's a really broad array of different, you know, topics and projects. And because you mentioned at the top, you know, this isn't just about cyber. You know, obviously hacking has that sort of connotation, but this is a very broad set of challenges. So I'm curious, in terms of the people that are self-organizing in these teams, because I imagine this is offered through the security studies program at Georgetown, correct?
That is. The security studies program is the program within which I teach, and Bruce Hoffman and Dave Maxwell have been exceptional, giving us exceptional support to continue this.
And I'm curious, in terms of then the students that are in these teams, do they have like technological backgrounds? Are they primarily ex-military or current intelligence officers? Like, what are sort of the demographics of the people that are participating in this?
All of the above. We have tech folks. We have former and current military folks. We have data analytics folks. We have linguists. Linguistics folks, we have policy folks, and then of course we have SSP folks. The course is open to all schools and all programs across Georgetown University. And next year, we're going to open up Hacking Defense to all graduate schools and all graduate programs in the National Capital Region. So instead of solving four problems next year, we're going to solve 40 problems next year.
Wow.
Yeah, so a bit ambitious, and it keeps us moving. But if we want to start to develop the capability to be able to solve problems quickly and effectively and cost effectively, then there is no better group of talent than America's graduate students to be able to help us do that. And so that's why we're trying to expand it the way we are.
Now, the other interesting thing, so this course will be open to everyone in the National Capital Region starting next year, which, as a person who currently works in academia, I know that getting even simple things like cross-registration agreements handled is a challenge. So best of luck to you as you navigate those minefields on the bureaucracy side. But it's really exciting that so many people are getting engaged. And the other method of engagement that I've noticed from this is the fact that you live stream all of the lectures for this course, correct?
Every class session, because we only do minimal lecturing at the end, is live streamed on Twitter at H4DGUSSP and also on our Facebook page, Hacking4DefenseGeorgetown on Facebook. So Facebook Live and Periscope Twitter, every week we put it out there. We want it's kind of like our own little national security reality TV show, I guess. But we put it out there because we want people to see the quality of students that we're attracting to this class and the difficulty of some of the problems that they're working on. Because quite frankly, for many of these students, this is a 13-week job interview, right? many of our corporate partners have already reached out to our students and said, look, when this is done, I'd really like to speak to you about this. And that's because they're doing it well. They're digging in. They're becoming better problem solvers. They're becoming better team members. And they're leveraging everything that they've learned in graduate school and everything they haven't learned yet but are learning on the fly towards solving this particular problem that they're working on.
So you've seen then firsthand the sort of the feedback loop, the positive feedback loop of the people and the organization supporting the course of wanting to continue not just, you know, getting access to the course itself, but to the students and possibly looping them into their own work.
Listen, I just spent last Friday with one of our corporate partners, OG Systems in Chantilly, Virginia, where the CEO and two other executives sat us down and said, we want to be part of this forever. And the reason is because we get to see some of the problems that are plaguing national security. But for us, part of the, you know, the most interesting thing is the talent that is sitting in that classroom is unbelievable. It's, we've not seen anything like that in any other classroom environment. And so we're, you know, admittedly, selfishly, they want to find out how they can hire the very best students out of Georgetown to become part of their companies. So we're very, I mean, we're ecstatic about that, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's always the concern as a, again, a recent university grad school graduate. That definitely is the top of mind concern for everybody that's going through their final exams right about now. But I'm curious, in terms of the fact that you have OG Systems and all of these other corporate partners and also the military liaisons and the intel liaisons, how did you go about building this very diverse and very multi-stakeholder infused team? Because it couldn't have been easy to, you know, try to sell organizations, especially ones that may not be as used to working with the military or working with Georgetown, on getting involved in this very ambitious, very unique program.
So it was a little bit of everything, right? A lot of it came from my own personal network, from being involved in the national, the business of national security over the last 20 years or so. Certainly the folks out at Stanford at Hacking for Defense Incorporated were very helpful in introducing us to different folks who wanted to be involved. It's not, I got to be honest with you, it's not a difficult sell. This is the coolest class being taught. If you're any type of international relations, national security, diplomacy, government, business geek at all, this is the coolest class being taught anywhere. So it's not a hard sell, but we want to get the right people involved. We don't want just anyone, because we also have investors in the classroom as well. So at the end of the day, if there's a there for the solution that these students have, that the student teams have come up with, so either the government will, you know, ask them to continue their work and give them some money afterwards, or they're going to start a company and they're going to get venture money in order to get that company going if there's a there. There is nothing else like it around the country right now.
So then what is the next step then for Hacking for Defense, for the course in particular that you're teaching at Georgetown, apart from incorporating all of the other schools in the National Capital Region? Like, what do you see as the vision for where you want this very unique and clearly very successful business model to go?
So I'm involved on the education side, right? So for me, I really want to continue to work closely with the Hacking for Defense H4DI folks out at Palo Alto, and also with MD5, to make sure that we can, we want to leverage all of the talent in the National Capital Region. So there's 16 different universities in the National Capital Region Consortium. We want to be able to take advantage of all of that graduate school talent across all of the schools and programs, and leverage all of that talent against hard problems that our problem sponsors are giving us. What we're coming to find, we already have now, is now there's international interest. So Oxford University has interest in forming a partnership with Georgetown. I know that the NATO representative at the Pentagon for strategic transformation, General Imre Porkalab, is all over trying to bring this to NATO. Now, so from an education perspective, Georgetown will play a role here in the National Capital Region. From an enterprise-wide perspective, a company out in Palo Alto called BMNT sort of has the lead on enterprise-wide Hacking for Defense methodology to bring it into government offices, to bring it into corporations, and to bring it into friendly and allied militaries if they desire. So there's a corporate, sort of a commercial side to this, and that's BMNT, and then there's an education side, and that's H4D.
Great. And for the people that are out there, whether they're, you know, currently in the fleet or they're listening with our partner, say, in the University of Kiel in Germany or down in Australia, for anyone that's interested in this Hacking for Defense movement, what would you recommend for ways for those people to get involved or to learn more about your organization?
So, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned Australia. One of our mentors for Hacking for Defense in Georgetown is a gentleman by the name of Jamie Watson, and he's a Australian military liaison for innovation and technology. He's actually helped bring Hacking for Defense to the Australian military already. So if you're out in Australia, we're coming to a base near you, and that's BMNT that's bringing it out there. If you are a member of the military or the intelligence community and you have a particularly difficult problem and you don't have the capacity to solve it yourself, not meaning that you don't have the mental capacity, you don't have the bodies to throw at it to get it solved, but it's an important problem, they should go to h4di.org and register as a problem sponsor. And the good folks, Darren Halford, who runs h4di.org, the nonprofit, will help them curate the problems and then get it into the hands of the right university who can help them solve the problem. That's how this whole thing works, is we want as many problems as the national security ecosystem can give us, and we want to put as many talented graduate students against it as we possibly can. But it has to start with the problem. So anybody who's listening, if they have a challenge or a problem that they want to have looked at, they should go to h4di.org and start the process.
So obviously the program sponsors that you're working with and the liaisons are very helpful in building this Hacking for Defense system, but obviously there are other innovation initiatives happening either within the defense community or outside of it. So I'm curious, what other organizations have you been working with and what sort of help and support, whether it's financial or advocacy or guidance, have you been getting from outside the Hacking for Defense initiative?
It's a great question. I have to tell you, everyone has been supportive. So DIUX has been fantastic to us. The Defense Innovation Board has been very involved. Josh Marcuse and Aaron Schumacher from the Defense Innovation Board have been exceptionally supportive of us. The Defense Entrepreneurs Forum, run by Jim Perkins and Ben Taylor, have been all over us. They serve as mentors for us. They get the word out to the innovation community. It's been amazing. They very much welcomed this very new thing into their innovation meadow, if you will, and we all try to help each other make progress together. So I can't say enough about the Defense Innovation Board, DIUX, the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. The Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Selva's office, has been exceptionally supportive. And of course, our friends at MD5, Jay Harrison, Joe Schumann, Libby Prescott, have been fantastic to us, as has everyone out at Stanford. It's a rock star crew, and we couldn't be happier to be working with all of them.
Now, I'm curious, as you've approached some of these organizations for the first time, were they pretty receptive right off the bat in terms of getting excited about the idea and wanting to work on partnerships and provide support? Or is it something that, you know, you needed to do a little bit of a sell job on in order to bring in these very important, very strong organizations and people onto your side?
It was not a difficult sell, but I will tell you what sold everybody is our opening class at Georgetown. We invited everybody. So we had 20 students. I had 113 people in the classroom, and they were all curious about how this Hacking for Defense program was going to work. At the end of the class, everybody was on board. So we have routinely 80 people in a classroom every week for 13 weeks working on helping us get better. You know, and the great thing is the corporate partners are just fantastic. They step up every time. The islands, different islands of innovation that we talked about, the innovation, Defense Innovation Board and DIUX and everybody, once they saw the process, sold. kind of like finding a kindred spirit in the national security innovation wilderness. So we're very excited about it.
So it's very interesting what you're working on. I think we've started to reach the end of our interview. So as is Sea Control tradition from time to time, I want to ask you about what you're reading. So whether it's online articles or books, what sort of things have you been reading recently that will either, say, help the audience get to learn more about hacking for defense and sort of the ideas behind that, or even for unrelated topics? What are sort of the top of mind reading pieces that you have right now?
Sure. So since we're still in the semester, I've been really focused on the books that we're using for Hacking for Defense. One of them is called The Value Proposition Design, and that's by Alex Osterwalder. But Steve Blank's book, The Startup Owner's Manual, is one of our texts, and it is fantastic. His other book, Four Steps to an Epiphany, also great. And then, as I mentioned before, it's important for us to help students understand how to better have conversations and elicit information. So Talking to Humans is a great book for our students. But personally, so I just finished Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Inc., which was just amazing to me. I thought it was one of the best books on both business management, but also how to think through challenges. It was fantastic. And for national security stuff, I got to tell you, I've become addicted to the Cipher Brief. They do really, really smart. It's an online magazine, really smart stuff by really smart people. It's different from everyone else, what everyone else is doing. So yeah, the Cipher Brief is sort of one of the things I read every morning.
Well, everything you're working on, Professor Taylor, is really wonderful. I'm very excited about this personally. I'm actually maybe going to go down the hall tomorrow when we come back to work from Patriots Day and talk to the people in the security studies program at Fletcher about maybe trying to start up a course like this. But thank you very much for the work that you're doing on behalf of the nation and on behalf of world security, and really appreciate your time being on Sea Control today. Thank you so much.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
That concludes episode 133 of Sea Control from the Center for International Maritime Security. I'm Matt Marighi, your senior producer for Sea Control. Special thanks to our guest, Chris Taylor, and our producer for this episode, Roman Medaus. And if you enjoyed this podcast and you haven't already yet subscribed to Sea Control, please do. Subscribing gives you automatic access to all of our episodes immediately as they become available. And if you really like us, go on over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and tell all of your friends to tune in. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time on Sea Control.